Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavrinda Om Jnana Kamirandasya Janjana Shravakaya Chaksuhun Militam Minatasma Sri Guru Venamaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lam Jayati Girim Yakrita Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarina Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasa Rishi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare. So tonight's episode of the Lives of the Vaishnavacharyas, we're going to speak about Gopalpath at this moment. And a little teaser. At the end, I have some special notes from Padmanabh Goswami, we say right there at the Radharamanji Temple, on details about the worship of Radharaman that most people are not aware of. Most people. So after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he switched his residence. As much as a sannyasi has a residence, he switched his main headquarters to Jagannath Puri. And just shortly after being in Puri, decided to go on a tour of South India, visit many different holy places there. He traveled throughout everywhere, in one village to the next like that. And everywhere he went, he profusely distributed love of God. And hearing the nectaring names of Sri Hari from the lotus mouth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, many, many thousands of men and women felt relief from the blazing fire material existence. Just like this time of year, it's so hot and unpleasant here. And if one gets an opportunity to go to the Ichthakni and take a float trip down, the water is a nice 72 degrees, and one feels immediate relief upon entering into that water from however hot it might be. In the same way, for one who has a little bit of spiritual insight, they see that the material world is a very burning, hot place, and that there's no pleasure here. But just by coming in contact with the sound vibration of the holy name uttered from the mouth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, these people were completely relieved, felt great satisfaction. And, you know, not all of them were very pious people. They were different, wretched, miserable, fallen souls who were also completely rejuvenated. And by this contact with the Harinam from the mouth of Mahaprabhu, and as a result, they became very virtuous and happy people. So in this way, he caused the rains of love of Godhead to fall anywhere and everywhere that he went. And there was no consideration of time or place, or proper recipient or improper recipient. Gaurasundar just traveled all these places and freely gave love of God to everyone. So in this way, going here and there, he came to the holy place of Sri Ranga Kshetram and the Kaveri River. Of course, the temple of Ranga Kshetram is a very, very large temple. It says that the tower of that temple is tall enough as if it is piercing the very sky. And day and night, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of pilgrims come and go taking darshan of the Lord, Raghunath. And the temple hall is always resounding with hundreds and thousands of Brahmins sitting there in groups or behind their sacrificial fires and chanting the different Vedic hymns. And in the midst of all this scene, which looked like it was straight out of Vaikuntha, all these personalities engaged in devotional activities, Gaurasundar entered into this chanting the holy names of Krishna with his very, very sweet voice that was described to be almost like the sound of 10 million Gandharvas. You can imagine one Gandharva is very, very sweet. 10 million Gandharvas. It says that everyone that was in the temple at that time, the Brahmins, the pilgrims, everyone was completely dumbstruck. Was completely dumbstruck by and amazed and even thrilled with wonder at the sight of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His unprecedented beauty, his bodily effulgence that, well, between the beauty and the bodily effulgence, molten gold hung its head in shame. It was just so beautiful. And his eyes, which were like full-blown lotus petals, not lotus petals that are a little open, but it says full-blown, all the way back to almost his ears. And these eyes were filled with tears of love of God that trickled down across his cheeks. Every limb in his body, every part of his body, was just the complete deposit of grace and beauty. And the people felt by looking upon Mahaprabhu that their minds had been stolen away by Cupid. How was it possible? The Brahmins began to talk amongst themselves from behind their sacrificial pits. Is this some demigod? Can such symptoms and emotions be found in any human being? And the sound of the holy name began to again resound throughout the hall. And when Mahaprabhu went through the hall and then came into the inner sanctum of the deity, he fell down just like a tree blown by the wind in full Gandharvas, it says. Some people felt when they saw him fall like that, that, oh, a large golden mountain has just fallen into the path of the deity. Sri Venkatavat was the pujari there. He was the head of the temple. And seeing this divine person, he himself became quite restless and filled with ecstasy. And his heart became flooded with devotion. He got up from where he was sitting and began to move through the crowds and push them all away so that the Lord could freely engage in chanting and dancing, keeping everyone back a bit. And when the Lord finally, after falling in ecstasy and falling unconscious and rising and chanting, when he finally engaged external consciousness, began to engage in full sankirtan and finish that sankirtan, Venkatavata approached him. And he took the dust of his own lotus feet, of Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. Mahaprabhu gazed at him most puzzled and said, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna," and then reached out and firmly embraced him. Venkatavata invited, obviously a great mendicant, a saint, "Please, you come to my home." So he took him there. And very reverentially, he set him down and washed his lotus feet. And all the different family members came and also washed the lotus feet of the Lord. And then they drank that water. And it mentions that the entire house of Sri Venkatabhata's family just became completely filled with ecstasy and joy. And they just felt something they'd never felt before upon taking this foot washing, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, while Mahaprabhu was staying in Rangashetra, he developed a close relationship with Venkatavata. Because Venkatavata had two brothers, Tirumala Bhatt and Prabhupananda Saraswati. His second brother we're very familiar with, Prabhupananda Saraswati. I remember the first time coming across this name. It seemed so similar to Prabhupada's. We were all a little puzzled, you know. Prabhupananda Saraswati. So they all belong to the Ramanuja Sampradaya. And Prabhupananda Saraswati was a Tridandi sannyasi of that order. Now, Venkata had one small son, and that boy's name was Gopal. And so Gopal was one of the family members that came and got to take the charanamrita from the feet of Mahaprabhu. And he would come into the room when Mahaprabhu would be there. He would come into the room and he would offer obeisances, and Mahaprabhu would call him over and pick him up and set him on his lap and pat him on the head and embrace him like this. He was very fond with him, very affectionate. And he would be taking his prasadam and he would call, "Gopal, come." He'd give him some piece of his Mahaprasad off of his plate, some bit of samosa or a piece of idli or, you know, whatever he was having like that. So in this way, Gopal became very much attached to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And with very firm determination, even though he was a young boy, with very firm determination, he made up his mind to accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as his guide and spiritual master. So of course, this was the rainy season, and the practice of the sannyasis is to travel during the rest of the year, and then during rainy season, Chaturmasya Vrata, to find some place and stay put. It's very difficult to travel in the rain. Everything becomes soaked and the obstacles and, you know, like that. So sometimes the rain is so much that, you know, the roads become washed out. So they would stay in one place. But of course, during that staying in one place, they would execute different types of austerities. Because the reason they travel is to become detached. Just like the Goswami stayed in a different place every 3 days under a different tree at a different riverbank like that, so as not to become attached to one place. So the sannyasis would stay in these places for 4 months during the rainy season and perform different types of penances and austerities while staying there and speak regularly from the Bhagavad Gita. So the rainy season finished. Mahaprabhu informed Venkata Bhatta, so Chaturmasya is done, rainy season's over. I'm now going to take my leave and continue on with my journey. It mentions that the home of Venkata Bhatta fell into an ebb of a tide of tears, simply hesitating at the expected departure of Mahaprabhu, knowing that he was leaving, crying and crying. Gopal himself came to Mahaprabhu and a dead faint at his lotus feet. Mahaprabhu picked him up and Gopal came back to consciousness. Gopal begged him, no, you cannot leave. Please, how can you leave us? We're so dependent upon you. Please, you must stay. So Mahaprabhu decided to stay a little longer. Now some schools of teaching say that he stayed for 2 additional days and some say he stayed for 2 additional weeks. Either way, he stayed for a bit. And in staying that way, everyone in the house was very, very pleased. Before leaving, Mahaprabhu was so pleased and so satisfied with Gopal's sincere service and endeavor that he initiated him. And he said to Gopal, he said, you stay here in your home and take care of your elderly mother and father. He was an only child. He said, you take care of your elderly mother and father. And when they depart from this world, then always engaged in chanting the glories of the Lord, you come to Vrindavan. So in this way, he continued on and went on his own way. Now during this time, Gopal executed his studies and he became very expert in grammar, in poetry, in rhetoric, all the basic things. Then at the time of his 10th or 11th year, he was given the Upanaya. And his uncle, Prabhu Vinanda Saraswati, specifically began to instruct him in the Vedas, particularly in the Bhakti Shastras, because these were accessible to Prabhu Vinanda Saraswati. He mentions that during all of these activities of his studies and his different services, Gopal Bhatta always remained thinking deeply of the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu and meditating on the time of when will I get to see him again? When will I get to see him again? At the same time, as much as that desire was strong within his heart, he couldn't leave his aged mother and father. He had an obligation as the only son to take care of him. And additionally, Mahaprabhu instructed him, you stay and serve them until they departed. So in this way, he continued serving them. Finally, having reached the final days of their own life, mother and father called to him, said, we are soon to depart from this world. Once we do, you should go to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Vrindavan, and in this way, take shelter of him. Then it mentions that closing their eyes and meditating on the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mother and father both at the same time left this world for the eternal pastimes of the world. Pretty much. Upon the departure of his mother and father, of course, Gopabhatta was quite saddened by this and performed all the proper activities. But he was more saddened by the fact that he was separated from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, at this point, Gopabhatta was 30 years old. So he left and went to Vrindavan. And arrived there in Vrindavan with great anticipation swelling in his heart, with great desire in his heart that he would meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Vrindavan. Only to get to Vrindavan, be informed that Mahaprabhu had left from Vrindavan and was no longer there. So Mahaprabhu had previously noted to Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis that Gopabhatta would one day come to them in Vrindavan, and upon his arrival, they should accept him as their brother. So they treated him with the great care and affection and friendship that they treated each other, and immediately the three of them became lifelong companions. However, the all-knowing Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, soon understood and received word from Rupa that Gopabhatta had come to Vrindavan. And he was very pleased. He had returned to Puri by this time, and he was very pleased to hear that Gopabhatta was settled nicely there in Vrindavan. He was now Gopabhatta Goswami, of course. So he decided to send some gifts to him from Puri. So he sent to him one wooden seat, one plank that he would sit on, and some uttara and chadar, some undergarments and some upper cloth he sent these to. So these were sent by messenger. So the messenger, of course, there was no FedEx, didn't get there. Two-day express, we guarantee. So he had, of course, Gopabhatta wasn't expecting. He didn't order it off of Amazon and was waiting, where is it? Where is it? You know, it was a complete surprise when it came. So the messenger carried it for quite some time and then arrived in Vrindavan and gave these items to Gopabhatta Goswami. Gopabhatta Goswami, upon receiving the personal articles, the tadiya of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, fell immediately into a trance of ecstasy. And as a result, he worshipped those items as being non-different than Mahaprabhu. When he would worship his own deities, he would sit down on this wooden plank and he would use that to perform his daily puja. These items, of course, we all know these items are still in the Radharaman temple. They're kept locked in the treasury and twice a year they're brought out on Gaur Purnima and on the appearance day of Radharamanji. They're brought out and worshipped publicly like that. So Gopabhatta Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, they had no fixed residence. They would spend their nights in various kunjas and forests. They had been requested by Mahaprabhu to uncover all the lost holy places of Vrindavan. So they would go throughout Braj, different places. And during this time, they would also spend a great amount of time studying scriptures and composing various literatures. So they kept themselves very occupied in this way in fulfilling the order they had been given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and as a result of that, being fully filled with his mercy and remembering him. After, speed forward ahead a little bit, after the disappearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gopabhatta Goswami felt immense, very, very intense separation from the Lord. We can only dream about such separation. He was plagued and harassed, you might say, day and night with his feelings of separation and crying, and very difficult for him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, whether he's physically present before us in his lila or not, is the Lord in our hearts and knows everything. And he could understand the intense desire of Gopabhatta for his darshan. So he appeared to Gopabhatta Goswami in a dream. And he said, if you want my darshan, you should take a pilgrimage to Nepal, to the Kalagandaki River. So Gopabhatta But the Goswami shared this dream with Rupa and Sanatana, and they were encouraged, yes, you should go there. And he packed what little belongings he had, and he began the long walk. I mentioned many times how I took a bus from Badrinath to Rishikesh. That was 10 hours by bus. And then I took a bus from Rishikesh to Vrindavan. It was an additional 10 hours. And of course, Kalakandaki is so much further north than that. And this was all walking at that time. So in this way, he walked and eventually arrived at the famous Kalakandaki River. So he arrived there, and the first thing he did was take bath in the Kalakandaki River. As he took bath, he took his water pot, and he dipped his water pot into the river. And he was very surprised when he looked in. There were several Shalagam Shiras there. Because, of course, the Kalakandaki is the home of the Shalagam Shiras. So he very reverentially emptied the Shalagams back into the water and put his pot in the water again, and there they were again in the pot. Well, this won't do. He emptied them out again, and a third time, and they were there again. So this time he counted, there were 12 of them. And he decided, this must be the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I will keep these shilas and return to Vrindavan with them and worship them, always remembering Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who instructed me to come here. So in this way, he went back to Vrindavan. He arrived back in Vrindavan and began to worship these 12 Shalagam Shiras. Sometimes this story is told, I've heard from bona fide sources both ways, that he arrived in Vrindavan, began the worship, and thought, no, this isn't right. And he went back to the Kalakandaki and replaced them, and they came back into the pot again. Sometimes it's told without that. Either way, he returned to Vrindavan with the 12 Shalagams. And he would keep them tied in a cloth around his neck. And he had one way he would tie the cloth into a knot so they were in the bag, and then tie that cloth around his neck. And everywhere he would go throughout the Raj, he would carry these 12 Shalagams like this. Sometimes under this tree, sometimes on the bank of that river, here and there, different places. One day, a very wealthy businessman, a Seth, as they say, that's the caste of wealthy businessman, I guess. So he came to Vrindavan, and he was going to the different Goswamis and giving charity, you know, nice jewels and nice cloth and nice crowns and turbans and things of this nature to the different Goswamis for their seva, for their deities. So he came to Gopalpati Goswami, very respectfully bowing before him, I have these things for the worship of your Lord. Gopalpati Goswami was, very happy to accept them and very much appreciated the respectful reverence of the man. But said to him, how will I use this? I worship these round Shalagam Shiras. Can't put any dhoti, no bundi, no jewels. How can I? You should give them to someone else. I'd be very kind of you. No. You must take. I give them to all the Goswamis. This is my vratati. Yes, so you please take. All right, you accepted them. So accepting them, he looked at all these very nice decorations, and how will I use it? So he placed them in front of his lords, and he prayed to them. He said, dear lords, I've received these gifts which are meant for you, but I don't know how it's possible that I can offer them to you. Now this particular day, there was significance here. This day was Nisringa Chaturdasi, and this is why this wealthy man was going around on this very holy festive day, giving in charity to the Goswamis. So in this way, Gopalpati prayed. He gave one prayer before the deities. My Lord, you are very merciful, and you always fulfill the desires of your devotees. It is my desire to serve you in a form that has legs, arms, and a blissful smiling face with sweet lotus eyes. If I had such a deity, then I would offer all of these cloths and jewels and ornaments, and I could decorate such a deity very nicely with this. But it is not happening. Oh, I just put these in front of you for your pleasure. He went to chant offered a little bit of boga and some arti to the deities, and then put them to rest, covering them. He had a little wicker basket that he would keep them in, it mentions. And he would put a cloth over that wicker basket at night. And then he set to do his chanting. Took a little bit of rest, just kind of half sleeping, and dozing off like that. And then in the early morning, he got up, he went to the Jamuna, took his bath in the Jamuna, very blissfully down near Keshigad area, and came back with his dhoti and everything and ready to do his puja. So Shavarado could have known what the ring and the bell, and pulling back the cloth, he was most amazed. Right in front of him, when he uncovered the cloth, laying amongst the shalagrams, was the most beautiful form of Krishna. There were now 11 shalagrams and this one deity. Amazing. What had happened was that there was one Shila named Damodar. And this Damodar Shila had opened up, and the deity of Radharaman had self-manifested from inside the deity, inside the Shila. You know, sometimes on science programs on television, they show a caterpillar and going into the moth, and then, you know, they show in fast motion, and then the caterpillar cocoon opens up and the moth springs out. So in this manner, the shalagram opened up and Ramanji was right there. So this was very, very amazing. And Gopalabhata was just astounded. He held the deity, beautiful threefold bending form, tree bunga. He was just floating in an ocean of ecstasy, and he placed him back in the basket and fell to the ground and began to offer all types of prayers and dandavats and glorification and obeisances and all types of hymns praising him in this way. So he immediately went to Rupa and Sanatan and told them and showed them. They came and he showed them, and they were also very much amazed. And this became the origins of Radharamanji. Actually, to this day, the worship at Radharamanji in Vrindavan is some of the highest standard of deity worship in all of Braj. On his appearance day, the anniversary of this, they bathed him in 500 liters of milk. Now, a liter is more than a gallon, right? Or less? 2 liters in a gallon. So it's like a quart. So that's like 250 gallons of milk they poured on the deity. And where is such a quantity of milk stored? One huge silver pot. You've seen it. It's a silver pot. It's got to be this big around, and it's about this tall. And they just pour all the milk in there, and like that. So all the devotees, you know, came running when they heard about this, and Rupa and Sanatan are there with Gopalabhata, and all the Vaishnavas are coming to see. The news quickly spread throughout Braj, the appearance of this amazing deity. And so as everyone looked upon the beautiful form of Radharamanji, they were all just amazed. It mentions that his beauty bewildered all the living entities, even those in the plants and animal species. And so they collected all these different things, and some devotees came and even bathed him with their tears. They were so moved by him. So there's another interesting thing about Radharamanji, is that when during the Mughal and invasions and all, when all the deities left, with the exception of Vrindadevi and Radharamanji, all the other deities left Vrindavan, they were the only two that never had to go. Somehow or another, he escaped going out of there. And of course, if you go to visit there, the temple is just right next to Nidubhan, that beautiful place where the Rasa dance takes place. Very, very nice there. Now, the deities called Radharamanji, even though there is no physical form of Radharani, they have a place there where Radharani is, and they place garland and chadar and a crown, and but there actually isn't a Radharani deity there, just to the Lord's left there. The right. So in this way, the pujaris, they do worship Radharaman together. Now, one thing that's very unique about Radharaman, and because Gopalabhata had prayed, you know, that she would have beautiful lotus eyes and beautiful features and so forth, that he has all types of amazing detail. His fingernails, his teeth. There's some very incredible photos you can see. Whereas you can see 2-3 photos of Radharamanji, completely different. Sometimes his lips are completely closed. And sometimes you can see a smile with just a hint of teeth behind his lips. Very amazing to see that. And what's really far out is twice a year they bring him forward near the front of the altar, not back in his darshan room, for the big abhishek. And when he's brought forward, if you stand to the far, far, far left corner, right before the wall, and you look, you can see the Damodar Shila on his back that he emerged from. Yeah, yeah. A little kind of like a hump there. Yeah, yeah. It was twice a year you can see that. And I was fortunate enough one time to be there during the festival of his appearance and I get to see that. They have a very nice sprinkler system on that altar too, where by pulling the fans during the very, very hot summer months, there's water there and it can cool down on the deity like that, you know, kind of like a transcendental bath during the middle of the day. So, it's a very, very wonderful place, the Sananyatra that takes place there in the bathing is very, very sweet. Once there were some scientists, some British, this was back when the British had their prominent rule in India, and Vishwambhar Goswami told me this story. They had some doubt about this deity being self-manifest. And this wasn't immediate history, this was quite some distant history. Great-great-grandfather like that. Anyway, somehow or another, they allowed the scientists to examine Radharaman. And they could find no indication of any type of carving or any mark of carving anywhere on the deity. So they were completely dumbfounded to begin to believe this is true. Now, Gopal Bhatta did not always stay in Vrindavan. One time he was traveling and he went to Haridwar, Haridwar, sorry. And when he was returning, when he was getting ready to leave that place, there was a sudden downpour of rain, very, very hard, torrential rains. And so he didn't have anywhere, but there was one small house there. He knocked on the door, and he pleaded, you know, I'm just a poor Brahmin. And then, oh, no, please, Sadhu, come in. So the family invited him in, and they were very, very devoted to him, gave him a dry cloth and washed his feet, of course. Of course, he just came in from the well where he wanted his feet washed, but it was proper etiquette. He washed his feet very nicely and fed a nice prasadam. And, you know, Gopal Bhatta was very, very pleased. And he spent the night there, stayed with him. And the Brahmin had no children, just he and his wife. So they, husband and wife, after receiving the sadhu so nicely before he was leaving the next morning, they came to him and they said, oh, Goswamiji, you please bless us that we may have a son who will be a devoted follower of Lord Hari. And Gopal Bhatta said, yes, have my blessings, you may find yourself with a son. And the Brahmin said, if we get such a son, I will send him to you. No, oh, thank you very much, that's so kind of you. Right, I must be living now. Flash forward 10 years. Gopal Bhatta Goswami is in Vrindavan. And one afternoon, he goes down to the bank of the Jamuna to take a bath. Takes his bath in the Jamuna. He comes back to his kutir. There's a young boy sitting in front of his kutir. Very young. 10, 11 years old, like that. And when the boy saw Gopal Bhatta Goswami coming, he immediately rose, offered his pranams, and then full dandavats to him. Gopal Bhatta Goswami said to him, oh, who are you? What brings you to my kutir? He said, my home is in Devanandagram, near Haridwar. And my father, he has sent me here to save you, to serve you. My name is Gopinath. And I am the son of such and such Brahmin. Gopal Bhatta thought for a minute and remembered, oh yes, I stayed in that house, I gave that promise that they would have a son, so, all right, you can stay. So he took him in and he trained him. The boy remained with him and very, very sincerely, with great devotion and great attention, he served him. And eventually he became known as Gopinath Pujari. You see in Chaitanya Charitamrita he's sometimes mentioned. And in due course of time he received his upanaya from Gopal Bhatta and began to be the servant of Radharamanji. Now, it ended up he had a brother, and a younger brother, and his name was Damodar. And so, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he had an intention to turn over the worship of Radharamanji to Gopinath Pujari. He said, I want you to marry, take the responsibility, have children, and in this way the deity service can go on. Gopinath requested, he said, I have no interest in being married. But I have a brother, he's already married. His name is Damodar. And Damodar has three sons. Their names are Harinath, Mathuranath, and Hariram. So they all came, and they relocated there to Vrindavan, and they all became disciples of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And that is the five family lines that now take care of the Radharamanji deity. One of them is a Diksha line, and the other two are seminal, the other four are seminal lines. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami's devotion was very, very special. It produced such a profound mood in him that the Lord agreed to appear before him in a very unique form that had never manifested before. And, it confirmed that these were the pastimes of Mahaprabhu acting through the deities for the Goswamis of Vrindavan. So in this way, Gopal Bhatta worshipped Radharaman, always meditating very deeply on the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, we know that in due course of time, one young boy came to reside in Vrindavan. His name was Srinivas. He eventually became Srinivas Acharya. And when he was in Vrindavan, he became the disciple of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And he trained him very, very expertly. Now, because Gopal Bhatta Goswami was coming in the family of Venkat Bhatta, the Sri Vaishnavas, he wrote many books on the details of the different rules and regulations and the Vaishnava applications of those. Very long list of books that he has written. That it's mentioned that Sanatana Goswami assisted him in completing the Hari Bhakti Vilas, and it was published under Gopal Bhatta Goswami's name. Gopal Bhatta Goswami lived for 45 years in Vrindavan. And so he lived to the age of 75. So he left South India at the age of 30, moved there, and stayed in Vrindavan for 45 years. And when he reached the age of 75, he returned to his eternal pastimes at the side of Sri Krishna. Gaura Gonadesha Deepika of Kavi Karnapur Goswami mentions that in Krishna Lila, that Gopal Bhatta Goswami was Guna Manjari, one of the intimate associates of Radha and Krishna. I had the opportunity to sit down with various times with both Vishwambhava Goswami and Padmanabha Goswami on some particular questions and answers and some details about the worship of Radharaman. I just thought I'd share some of these. The mood of the worshiper can determine the name of a particular deity or of a particular Shalagram Shila. So although they may have certain markings of Shalagram, one who's worshiping them, if they have a particular mood, they can worship them in accordance to what particular personality they would like. He also mentioned to me that Hari Bhakti Vilas states that there are different types of material results, good and bad, pious and impious activities that come from worshiping different types of Shilas. But this type of consideration is overlooked by devotees. They worship any type of Shila in any circumstance without any consideration of the material desires or material benefits that will come from that. He mentioned to me, we all know the Saradiya Rasa Yatra pastime with the sweet rice at the beginning of Kartik. Sweet rice is put out under the full moon. He said that And then that full moon turns that sweet rice to pure amrita. And he mentions that there used to be a picture of Radha Ramanji and a pot of sweet rice would be put on the roof of the temple of Radha Raman at night on that time, and along with flowers and tulsi leaves and like that. And it was understood that Radha Raman was there, and sometimes Radha Raman was actually taken out and taken up to the roof for that offering. He said, but that's ancient history. It hasn't been done for some 250 years. And there was something else that was old history. Vishwambhar Goswami showed me pictures of his great-grandfather. So it would have been his grandfather. Grandfather or great-grandfather? You know how they do the banana stalk? Sometimes they cut the banana stalks and make all kinds of decorative things. So he showed me his old black and white 8x10 photograph of a banana stalk boat, a big boat with a steamer cabin and a wheel for steering, and behind the wheel is Radha Ramanji. They built it all up to the altar like that. And they have another one, they built a locomotive engine on a train. It's all the wheels and everything, and in the I'm going to call him a driver, what do they call him? Anyway, in the driver's window there is Radha Ramanji. And I asked Padmanabh if those would ever be done again. He said, no, those are my great-great-grandfather. He has done that. No one else has ever done, nor will it ever be done again. And he also mentioned that the restriction on certain numbers of shilas, shalagram shilas and porka shilas, he said this applies to personal puja, but not to the temple puja. And the temple is many. And he said this numbering system does not apply to Govardhan shilas. One, two, you know, odd numbers like that. That you can only have odd numbers, or you know, you shouldn't have, you know, like that. So, yeah. And he mentions that that's only for one's personal. And he said that once a daughter in the family is married, then she no longer has the right to worship Radha Ramanji, because she's married into an outside line from the five families. And therefore, she loses that right, as do any of her sons, to be able to perform any type of worship of Radha Raman, because the bloodline, so to speak, has become mixed now with some other line that are not followers in the original five families. I've never heard that they do. I don't know how that works. One time I actually said to in retrospect, it's amazing I was so arrogant, but I was sitting with Vishwambhar Goswami one time. We were discussing different things, and he had just finished doing his puja and his shalagram, and I was watching him. And we got to talking, and I said, you know, Goswamiji, I said, there's one thing I've always wanted to do, and I was wondering if there's ever a chance that sometime I might be able to offer arti to Radha Raman. And Vishwambhar Goswami smiled very big and looked at me and said, oh, that will never happen. In a very loving and grandfatherly way, he said, that will never happen. Now, in the Radha Raman complex, the houses that the Goswamis live in, those are their own personal property. And if they decide they want to sell that house, first right of purchase goes to another Goswami. And if none of those Goswamis want to purchase, second right of purchase goes to the Radha Ramanji temple, to the board. And if they decline not to purchase, then only then can an outsider be invited to purchase. But he noted that in the last 300 years, that's never happened, that anybody outside the families has purchased any of the property. Right. Right, so just set it in like that. Yeah. Rest in the crook of the arm there. Yeah, it's just such small holes between the fingers. You have to show me. Now, some details about the offering that is made to Radharamanji. The boga that's cooked in the kitchen, first of all, the fire in the kitchen has not gone out for over 400 years. It's the same fire. And the boga that's cooked on that is transferred, doesn't matter how much is cooked, it's all transferred into specially clean pots, large pots, and it's all taken and put in front of the deities, regardless of the quantity. The pujari does the padma ardi matriniam like that, and for 15 minutes, everything is offered to Radharaman. Then the pujari comes back in, Padman Achmaniyam, like that again. And then Radharani. Everything is offered to Radharani for 10 minutes then. Pujari comes back in, Padman Achmaniyam, like that. And then again, 5 minutes, everything is offered to Gopalbhatta Goswami's picture. Then the prasad is all taken away and distributed. And what is that prasad? Well, here's the list of what boga is for the deities. Their breakfast offering, which takes place depending on the time of year from between 7:30 a.m. till 9 a.m., consists of 9 types of sweets, halava, a variety of fruits, 3 different types of dal, kadhi sauce, sweet rice, plain rice, dry sweet rice. And the way you make a dry sweet rice, you cook the rice until it's done, but still wet. You add saffron, cardamom, and sugar, and then you drain all the water off and serve it like that. That's dry sweet rice. Vegetables, chapatis, sweet chapatis, and the way you make a sweet chapati is it's a regular chapati, but you baste it in sugar water instead of ghee at the end. Instead of slapping ghee on it, you put sugar water on it. And then pakora with yogurt and black pepper. That's the breakfast. Noontime comes, afternoon comes, 9 sweets, halava, and a variety of fruits. So breakfast is a really good meal. The evening rajbhog, whole wheat puris, white flour puris, dal puris, kachoris, 4 different types of laddu. White flour laddu, basin flour laddu, urd dal laddu, and I can't remember the 4th one. A sweet matari, a salty matari, and a tikiya. And a tikiya is... tikiya is... basin flour, deep fried, and then mixed with ajwan, cumin, and salt. And then a sahal, and that is white flour, deep fried, and mixed with ajwan, cumin, and salt. And a sevan, and that is... the same as the above, white flour, but instead of using salt, you use sweet, and you serve it with sweet condiments. And then halava, kira, vegetable, a raita, and variety of fruits. And then before taking rest at night, hot milk with saffron and pistachios. That's Radharaman's boga list for today. So we'll finish there. I'm a little bit short. So that's no problem. These are some wonderful memories and pastimes we can think of. Gopalbhatta Goswami. And remember how he served his Radharamanji deity. And we can strive to serve our own deities and Radhesham here in our temple in the same kind of manner. Hare Krishna. Gopalbhatta Goswami ki jai. Oh, question. Yes. He was, it doesn't say how young, but it says he was very young child. It seems to indicate he was crawling about and running about like that. So he stayed there until he was 30 years old. Because, you know, his parents apparently lived quite a long life. Vishwambar Goswami told me every 6 months it rotates around. And the way that works is that the family whose turn is coming up 6 months prior will receive an official invitation. Your cycle of service is coming up. If for some reason they cannot do that service, they can request another family to take the service up for them. If that other family is not able to, then by some means they have to arrange to be able to do this. Maybe they're going to be out of town or something like that. Because not all the immediate families live right there in the complex. Some of them live other places and then come because they have a home there and stay there for that 6 months to do their service. Everything, bathing, dressing, any festivals that go on, that's all. All the expense for these things come from their own pocket, as well as any of the income and donations that come during that time period also come to them. So it's for the maintenance of the temple, and they spend for that during that time. They have the exclusive authority over how much to spend on the flowers or what new arrangement to do for decorating for this festival or that, or we'll put banners up for this and like that. The total number is coming from the five, but beyond that, I don't know. And one thing that Padmanabh Goswami told me is that they have a system because they have many valuables in the treasury of Radharaman. For instance, when the Goswamis, before all the temples were built, the Goswamis would put the deities into these straw baskets into a boat and then float that boat out into the middle of a small kund, which is where the temple is now, and they would sit around that kund with bows and arrows to protect the deities. And those bows and arrows are in the treasury of Radharaman. They're never brought out and shown, but they're there. So there's also very many valuable jewels and gold and things like that. So when a pujari who's, when a family whose time it is for service comes and they have, everyone has a list of what's there. Okay, I want the following necklaces and the following gold crowns. They have to present that list. Then four trustees go to the almirahs where this is locked up. And first of all, the room itself has four locks, and they all four have to be unlocked by these people. And then the almirahs that these are in have two locks, and two locks have to be unlocked by these people, these Brahmins. And then they're handed to the person who's going to do the service that time, and a signed copy is given to both parties, the trustees and the person that has them, so that you've signed out that you've got these goods for this period of time. At the end of using those, whether it's during that immediate service or kept for that period, then they're returned. And when they're returned, those same persons have to be there opening all four locks to get into the room, two locks to get into the almira, and then put it back. And then it's signed that such and such received this. So that in the future, if anything's missing, oh, it missed during so-and-so's turn. Oh, where it's your fault. No, no, no. See, I have the sign slip here. It was shown to such and such. So everything's very, very carefully checked and balanced like that. That way there's no concerns about the gold or the jewels or the silver or anything disappearing. Very strict system like that. Jai. Gopal Bhatta Goswami ki jai.